Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Wednesday, June 27th. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speed, the Spitting Statistician. And as always, I am joined by FSWA Hall of Famer, the King, Scott Engels. Scotty, how you doing on a Wednesday morning, man?
Feeling good. Getting ready for some football. Go to rotoexperts.com. Exclusive Edge package is live with my latest updating rankings and top 100s.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be diving into your rankings as we move along. We're also going to be talking a little bit later on today about, you know, this idea of the zero RB theory, the zero wide receiver theory. You hear about that thrown around a little bit. What we're going to do is we're going to actually help define it for you and talk about, hey, is this a viable strategy? Is this a good strategy? We got our guy from Daily Roto, Mike Leone, who contributed to the Roto Experts package, kind of outlining that for you. So we want to give you a little taste about that. Let's start though, Scott. We got some news and notes from the NFL. Listen, I know it's late June. I know we're in kind of a dead period, let's say, of the NFL calendar, but listen, this is where you get the advantage on everybody you play against. You say championships are won in the offseason. If you are not preparing, then you are preparing to fail. So we got to give you everything that you need to know. First of all, I want to talk about Le'Veon Bell real quick, Scott. I mean, listen, it has now been years in a row where him and the Steelers are going back and forth. You know, he wants to be paid like one of the league's best running backs and a wide receiver, too. And if you think about it, he is the wide receiver, too, of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Scott, I mean, you know, catching 70, 75 balls, he is absolutely a stud. In my opinion, he is, you know, right there in the running for the number one overall player in fantasy. But as you know, he's holding out. Reports came out, or he held out, you know, last year, and he's talking about doing it again because he gets slapped with the tag. But reports are that he is, quote-unquote, a lot closer than last year when it comes to their kind of negotiations. How do you think this ends? Because, Scott, a couple years ago, when he missed training camp, you know, the first few weeks, he wasn't as strong, and then he picked it up later on. And should Le'Veon Bell, you know, dynasty owners be worried that that might happen again, Scott?
I think, you know, there's just a lot of summer posturing, et cetera. And, you know, when it comes time to be there, that Bell's going to be there. And any time he misses in camp, I don't think really is going to affect him. So, you know, this is just something to fill the pages of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review right now.
All right, fair enough. And listen, obviously, we know Le'Veon Bell will continue to be an RB1, continue to be a first-round talent. I personally see him going in the first three picks. So if you don't have him, if you don't have one of those, you ain't getting Le'Veon Bell. Scott, yesterday we talked about kind of like that rookie cycle. You know what I mean? How, like, you know, there was buzz about how great the rookie is, but the veteran can kind of hold him off and the talent wins out and stuff like that. Well, we heard notes and news from about two rookie running backs yesterday. Kind of out there in Cleveland, they're saying that Nick Chubb has a chance to start and maybe, you know, kind of overtake Carlos Hyde by week one. And then also in Washington, there's reports now that they would out there be surprised if Darius Geis does not start You know, I kind of think, you know, Geis is going to, you know, be able to overtake Samaje Perine, Fat Rob Kelly, people like that. But I'm more intrigued by Cleveland. When they say that Heat Chubb has a chance to start, how would you handicap that, Scott? You know, I guess it's him or Carlos Hyde. Who do you think winds up being the starting running back for the Browns in week one? And is this like, you know, I know it's not a timeshare when you include Duke Johnson. It becomes a full-on committee. Kind of handicap this one for me, Scott.
Well, it's you have to be careful about how you interpret the word. Some fantasy paper, you know, is chance, the word chance.
Sure.
Some fantasy players.
I have a chance to start for the Cleveland Browns, I guess.
Yeah, you know, maybe if you create yourself on Madden, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, but, it's a chance for everybody. But for Nick Chubb, it's real, right?
Yeah, well, he has a chance, though. Some fantasy players are going to run with that and say, well, they said he's going to start. You know, that's not what it's saying. He has a chance. Carlos Hyde has a chance as well. He has the opportunity to be the lead running back there, the lead ball carrier there, but he has to earn it. We don't know anything right now. Right now, to me, it looks like it's going to be a full-blown committee right now between Hyde and Chubb splitting the first team carries and Duke Johnson getting in there on passing downs or maybe them somehow splitting him as out as a receiver. So I'm looking at this as a fantasy situation that's going to create a lot of confusion here. So, as to who's going to start, look, Carlos Hyde could start because he's the veteran, but that'll just mean that he's on the field for the first play of the game. That doesn't mean, you know, starting and getting the most carries are two different things. So this could be a heavy timeshare between Chubb and Hyde. And look, Hyde has gotten injured often in the past, not in the recent past. We haven't seen it. This could be something where they're not concerned about fantasy. They want to give defense a variety of looks here, and they could do that by using different types of running backs.
Yeah, I think that makes sense here, Scott. Let me bounce something off you. Given the fact that this is a full-blown committee, I look at their roles, right? And you're saying that Chubb and Hyde are going to probably wind up splitting some kind of early down work. We all know Duke Johnson is one of the better pass-catching backs in the National Football League. You know, right up there would say like a Theo Riddick, a Chris Thompson, folks like that. All that being said, might Duke Johnson actually be kind of the more stable or safer guy to draft, especially in PPR league, Scott? Because listen, Hyde and Chubb, if they're gonna split, at least Duke Johnson has like the role that he has to himself. And in PPR leagues, being that pass catching back, you know, that point per reception is a lot more dependable than say the 45, 50, 60 yards that Chubb or Hyde might get on the ground if they are splitting with each other, because the pass catching role is more stable and secure for Duke Johnson. Might he wind up actually being the Cleveland running back to own?
No. And I'll tell you why. If you look back, you see those numbers, but we're projecting forward, and the receiving crew has improved greatly for the Cleveland Browns. They had to go to Duke Johnson a lot. I'm not saying Duke Johnson, you know, is going to get shut out or anything like that or not be relevant, but, you know, when you bring in Jarvis Landry, now you're having Josh Gordon for a full season, you got further depth with Corey Coleman, they're not going to need to throw to the running back as much. So Duke Johnson's floor is anything but stable this year.
Okay, fair enough. Hey, and the last thing, and, you know, I don't want to get into kind of the details of the police report and stuff like that, shall we say. We'll spin it forward to fantasy. But I do want to let people know that, as we heard in the top of the hour, Giants cornerback Janoris Jenkins, he's known as Jackrabbit. Apparently, there was actually a dead body found in his house yesterday that's been reported by TMZ. Now, listen, Jenkins has been in Florida since minicamp. He is not in any way being looked at in any wrongdoing or any criminality, but it is just very interesting. I do want to move it forward, though, Scott, as it relates to the New York Football Giants and their defense. I mean,
there's baseball Giants still?
But not in New York, I guess. Remember, I asked you about that. Like, did they ever call it the St. Louis Football Cardinals when they were back there? You know, so or like the Winnipeg Hockey Jets. But in any event, This Giants defense has kind of been a pendulum swing. I remember 2 years ago, they were really a top defense with, you know, Snacks Harrison in the middle, stuff like that. Then they get lit up a bunch last year, man. They couldn't fight their way out of a brown paper bag. I mean, I'm reminded of specifically one game in the Meadowlands where Jared Goff tore them up. Part Sammy Watkins with bombs, stuff like that. Janoris Jenkins is supposed to be what prevents that, okay? He was supposed to be this number one cornerback. I know there's DRC there. They have their troubles with the kid Eli Apple, the mercurial Eli Apple, shall we say. You know, defenses from year to year do have variance, but do you think the Giants have an opportunity to maybe come on back? I know a lot of people like their offense more this year with a healthy Odell Beckham, with Saquon Barkley, but it's not going to matter if they're giving up 35 points a game, Scott.
That's true. I don't know if the Giants defense is going to be that bad this year as they were last year.
They were pretty bad last year.
They were pretty bad. You know, I'm going to be doing some more defensive research in the next few weeks. But for fantasy purposes, you know, everybody's healthy. You have to remember they were bad defensively last year because they didn't have anything on offense. The defense spent a lot of time on the field and they couldn't be competitive in games. And, you know, that's why they were so bad, because they were 3-and-out and, you know, they couldn't control time of possession. You know, a good offense helps the defense. And you're going to see that with Saquon Barkley, as we saw with Ezekiel Elliott. The Cowboys have had a mediocre defense for years now. And when Ezekiel Elliott is there, it helps him dominate the clock and keep the defense off the field. And even if they're not as good as advertised, it keeps them fresh. And it also gives them better field position. So I think Saquon Barkley is going to be a big boost to the Giants defense.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense to me, Scott. And I would also say another team that I've seen do this last year was the New Orleans Saints. They have sort of evolved away from being dependent on Drew Brees to throw for 350 yards or 5,000 yards in the season. With, you know, Ingram and Kamara, they really rode that running game a little bit. And then what do you know? All of a sudden, people are also talking about the Saints' defense. Of course, you know, Marcus Lattimore and some of the guys that they got there. But the time of possession on the other side kept the defense fresh, out in opposed to kind of years past where Drew Brees is slinging it all over the place. Well, sometimes you're going to get 3-and-outs and that defense comes right back on the field. The Saints are kind of evolving in a similar way to support their defense. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah, and that's why you saw a downturn in the number from Drew Brees last season, you know, which confused a lot of people. We're still drafting him as like a top five, top six quarterback. Now, with the first four games, I think they know they still have a guy in Drew Brees back there who can help balance the offense. If they don't run the board nearly as exclusively as they did last year, or as often as they did last year, they can turn to Brees to move the ball around with high percentage passes. So you might see the offense be a little different during those first four games without Ingram, because this kid they drafted, Boston Scott, you know, he's not a banger.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, remember, they did sign Terrence West as well to help fill in there for the first. Trust me, I think he's just a guy. Also, I want no part of Terrence West. But, you know, this idea, you're right. They may be throwing a little bit more in those first four games. And Drew Brees is certainly capable of putting them on his back if they need to. I mean, he's done it for about a decade. But really, to support the aging Drew Brees and to give a blow to that defense, they were sort of evolving with Ingram and Kamara last year. Hey, Scott, I want to bounce one thing off of you real quick that we were talking about. I was talking about with Jake yesterday before we dive into this Mike Leone article about zero RB. We were talking about some of these back-end running backs, or back-end RB1 running backs. You know, a guy like Devontae Freeman, a guy like Leonard Fournette, stuff like that. And I mentioned we were talking about how these guys and some others in that vein have some injury concerns, you know, and that might be stuff that prevents them, because you're a little bit skeptical. You know, Freeman with the concussions that he's had, and Leonard Fournette with the lower body injuries all the way back towards LSU. And I guess my question is this, Scott. Would you rather your fantasy back, quite frankly, would you rather them have a concussion, or would you rather them have soft tissue injuries? You know, and I don't want to be inhumane about it, but I mean, these ACLs, they'll get you all season, right? A ligament, a tendon, these ankle things, what have you. A concussion seems to be a couple of weeks, and then they're back at it, but then they're at risk, you know, kind of for more potential injury. What do you think? Would you rather draft a back who's had maybe concussion injuries in the past, or a back that has like a history of knee or ankle issues?
That's really a tough one because everybody.
I don't want to be inhumane about it, right? But like, what kind of injury do you is you know? I mean,
if a guy is coming off a torn ACL, if a guy's coming off a torn ACL, I'll have more confidence in drafting him if I know he's healthy. But, you know, as inside injuries would let us know, when Dr. A used to come on with us in the past, you know, if a guy is at risk for a second or third concussion, you know, there's also – to re-injure the knee, I think, is less likely than to have a concussion that is going to come back and put you out again for a certain period like it did with Devontae Freeman. With the knee, it's more about the recovery and coming back from that and looking at it. With concussion, you know, if you're on your second or third, every time you get one, there's more risk for you losing time. So
yeah.
I guess if I had to pick one, I wouldn't want the guy with the concussion. I'd rather have the guy coming off the knee injury who's rehabbing.
Yeah, but at the same time,
I think a lot of people assume that because a guy was hurt last year that he's going to be hurt this year when he's coming back from a major injury, and that's not always the case.
Yeah, you know, and then it's interesting because kind of the flip side of that, though, Scott, would be like in season, if a guy gets a concussion, they're probably out for like 1 week, maybe two, right? But if a guy, you know, sprains an MCL, we're talking 4 to 6 weeks that you're missing him, right, in season. So it's interesting also kind of coming back and maybe the history versus even in season. And we talked about this when it came. I think the conversation was Leonard Fournette versus Devontae Freeman.
Look, there's no way, especially as a generality, you could say what I prefer more money injury because every guy's history is different and every guy has a different DNA and heals differently.
No, absolutely. It is. You know, I mean, we're just trying still. We are still very early at figuring out these kind of head injuries, I will say. I also saw, Scotty, I talked about it on Fantasy Freestyle yesterday, 7 to 8 p.m. Brett Favre, the Iron Man, you know, 297 straight starts and stuff. He wants to outlaw youth football. He wants to outlaw youth football. There's a bill in Illinois that would do just that under the age of 12. You know, we still are trying to figure out all the impacts on the head and, of course, on the brain. But, Scotty, as we move along here on Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network, you are absolutely right, Scotty. The Edge package has been released over on Roto Experts. You need to go on and cop that. The only way you can get it for free is if you beat me and Jake at Roto Clio all week long, and unfortunately no one has yet to do that. Scotty, we were talking about this Mike Leone article, okay? Mike Leone does great work. We talked to him here. You know, he represents Daily Roto as well, where they make millionaires. He did an article about the zero running back and the zero wide receiver strategy. And Scott, for people that don't know, okay, can we just kind of like define zero RB first? Does that mean in essence like not – so you're not drafting a running back at all until what? Maybe like your sixth round or so? Is that about right in terms of what it actually even means? Scotty, we may have
I would say the fourth round. You know, nobody's going to wait the sixth round to draft a running back. That's just not happening.
Okay, so, I mean, I did see in one of these, remember in the FSTA draft where we had Nando DeFino representing FNTSY, I saw Chris Liss of RotoWire and Mike Clay of ESPN. What they both did is they did not draft a running back until the fifth round. They went wide out, and tight end, okay? So, yeah, that's what we're talking about, okay? And similarly for wide receivers. So now there's
nothing in fantasy football is absolute. I shouldn't say that nobody would wait until the sixth round, but I think that's taking it kind of extreme. I think the people who get off with like three wide receivers and a quarterback or a tight end, you know, you're talking zero running back theory there.
Okay, fair enough. So now that we kind of know what level we're talking about, like, okay, so that's getting your running back, say, in the fifth round, or, you know, in essence, really pushing it aside and kicking the can down the road on running back, okay? Mike Leone mentions that there's a couple of kind of different rationale for why. And the first is this RB1 bust rate versus the wide receiver one bust rate. You know, I mean, we talk about how few workhorses there are, Scott, you know, kind of in the NFL these days. You know, they're maybe in about 8 or 9 places right now, right? But when one of these guys bust, and with the preponderance of timeshares and of committees, maybe it's harder to nail who that true workhorse is going to be. Talk to me a little bit about how the running back, the RB1, actually does turn out to be a bust because of injury or poor performance, maybe even more than the wide receiver one, given like their variance, right? That's a big part of why you might focus a little bit on running backs later on, because there's so many committees, there's not really any more true RB1s, and you could just pick one later on.
Yeah, it's more of a thing where if you miss out on those top four, and maybe even the top five this year, adding in Saquon Barkley, that you're not really getting enough of a sure thing. And but also, you know, it's, you know, if you read Mike Leone's new article on the exclusive edge package, it's more about, you know, being, I should say, being more well aware and studious on going deeper at running back, knowing that pass catching running backs can really put up a lot of points for you if you don't grab one of those studs up top. And it's also about, like, you know, Mike talking about how everybody wants to grab the best player available, whereas you should be just be looking for value in how to structure your team.
Yeah, so you kind of like let the draft come to you, right? It's not like,
it's,
oh my goodness,
more,
it's the
more than that.
Player rated it's, on the
it's,
board.
It's more than that. You know, it's more than just like letting the draft come to you, which is another axiom in strategy itself. It's about being more aware of when are those guys, can you pick them off later in the draft, those pass catching types, etc., when everybody else is just going for the best player on the board.
Gotcha. So, you know, and he outlines a couple of types of running backs. You mentioned one, Scott, the idea of the pass catching back, because especially in PPR formats, you know, we talked about a guy like Duke Johnson. You know, you talk about a Theo Riddick, you talk about a Chris Thompson, you talk about a lot of other kind of pass catching backs, a Sims, let's say. You know, there's a lot of opportunity there later in the round, and these PPR backs can return, you know, just as much value when you get them later on. So targeting those kinds of backs. The other thing he says, Scott, is to target backs in high-end offenses, okay? And I like doing that anyway. You know, as a rule of thumb for me, I always not only look at the player, but I look at the team that they are in. Is this a team that, you know, is known to have an electric offense? Is this a team that has a lot of options? I call them the fantasy herds, you know, where it's spread out a lot and you kind of never know on any given week. Is this a team that you expect to be doing well and like winning at the end of games for kind of game flow ideas, you know, that sort of thing? What do you think when Leone says backs in high-end offenses, why is that something you're looking for later on in the draft, Scott?
I think it's kind of pretty obvious. It's you know, you want teams on offenses that they're gonna, you know, move the ball very efficiently and, you know, give these guys volume. You know, as Matt Modica talks about in his Running with the Bulls column in the exclusive edge package, volume is king. And, you know, these guys are getting involved in the passing game. This is why you have to look at, like I did in my dynasty draft, at a running back like Nyheim Hines. You know, this is not a guy who's going to bang between the tackles, but if they throw him the ball a lot out of the backfield, you know, he can definitely bolster your flex position and maybe in some cases maybe even be an RB2 for you when the matchup is right.
Yeah, fair enough. So we talk about that with the pass-catching backs. Similarly, we talked about that with backs in high-end offenses that are going to be electric, going to be able to move the ball. Listen, I want no part of, like, you know, the Buffalo Bills wide receivers at all. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think they're moving the ball. I don't think they are a dynamic offense. So, yeah, sure, Kelvin Benjamin might be a decent talent, but when faced with him and, say, even, like, you know, the number two or three wide receiver on a team like, say, Green Bay, or a team that I think is going to score a lot of points, give me the player in the high-end offense. The last thing he says, Scott, is this idea of upside stashes. I mean, you know, it was funny. You interjected before with a guy like Terrence West, right? And we're like, so? I see the same thing about a guy like, you know, Doug Martin, both Raiders running backs, if you want to know the truth, right? But instead, you know, running back is a young man's hustle. It's a, you know, you're trying to look for players that are ascending. What are some clues there? How would you define, Scotty, a quote-unquote upside stash?
An upside stash, what do you mean?
No, that's what it says here in this article. Like Mike Leone is saying, if you go in zero RB strategy, you're looking for pass-catching backs. We talked about that. Backs in high-end offenses. We talked about that. And the third thing that he says to look for is upside stashes. I mean, guys that maybe can pop at the end of the year, rookies maybe that might, you know, stuff like
exactly.
that. Not, let's say, West of them all, the Doug Martin of them all, you know?
I got a little confused because I thought we had already covered that with me, you know, saying Nyheim Hines. But, you know, that's fine. You know, it's guys who are going to be values later on who, you know, maybe you're not necessarily thinking of. You know, it's just about digging deep in the field and knowing the field, reading the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package and doing your studying and knowing, you know, maybe about some guys that could break who are not really high on the radar. You know, I think Corey Clement is definitely one of those. Mm. I think he is certainly an upside stash who might play a bigger role in the Philadelphia offense this year. Especially,
you don't think Ajayi is going to get a bigger role because he came in mid-season last year?
Yeah, but you have to remember, we're talking about a timeshare here, though. They got rid of LeGarrette Blount. Now they have a physical running back. You know, Corey Clement plays a different kind of role in that offense.
All right, interesting. We will definitely keep an eye on the Philadelphia Eagles running back room because, as you know, we see here in this article also, they are a high-end offense. Maybe you want to grab the pass-catching back there. I hear Darren Sproles might be on the way back there in Philly as well. When we come back, we give you a little bit of the headlines from Major League Baseball. We got a little bit of an interview with Scott and Dodgers closer Kenley Jansen. And then we go back to zero wide receiver theory, all that and more. It's right here, Roto Experts in the Morning. Dane and Scott, come on back.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money and lots of it by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock daily fantasy sports.
Welcome back. It is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The King, Scott Engel, spitting statistician Dane Martinez. Listen, we got the manimal, Chris Bavona, down there in the fantasy pit of misery. Dilly dilly to him. And he's taking good care of you. If you want to join the show, holler at us at 844-843-6879. We will help you take it to the limit in your fantasy leagues. We got Kenny and Philly on the line right now.
We take that cup to the limit, yeah.
That's what it is. Scott's excited today. I like that. Yeah. Hey, Kenny, you're on the line. Roto Experts in the Morning. What's going on, man?
Kenny.
Hi. How you doing, boy?
How you doing, cowboy?
Hey, man, I can hear y'all on Freak, FYI. Y'all need to fix that. I heard the whole cowboy on Freak. But anyway, it's starting to smell like football, man. I'm smelling grass, man. What's going on with you guys, man?
Like getting ready for
doing
football,
well,
man.
We're getting really excited. I'm ready for some football. I know Scotty's ready for some football. Are you ready for some football, Kenny?
Always, man. This is when I come out of slumber here, and I'll be a normal caller here to the show. I gotta agree with Scotty's philosophy on the whole drafting situation. Like, I'm gonna give you a guy. Theo Riddick. He was a prime guy the past few years. You can get him in the later, well, not necessarily later, but the mid-level rounds, and he's a beast between the 20s. So, as far as the drafting goes, pretty much every round, I just have guys that hopefully they're going to be there. Like I said, you can't predict the draft or whatever, but you have the guys who you probably like to have on your team, more or less not. So, that's pretty much a good.
Yeah, we talk about these pass-catching running backs, though. Riddick is, you know, might be a little overrated. He's actually coming off a pretty down year there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that. Riddick, there's, you know, there's a guy like Chris Thompson that I like a lot there in Washington.
I love Chris Thompson.
Yeah.
When that guy's healthy, he has like some of the best gear, like getting past the secondary of any running back in the NFL. Riddick last year, 53 catches, 444 yards, 2 touchdowns. You know, he doesn't get in the end zone enough. And, you know, 2015 he was great, but he's declined every year since.
Absolutely. I agree. All right, guys, I'll be listening.
All right, thanks a lot there, Kenny. Remember to call back anytime as we go to football. We will certainly be taking some more of your calls. The number to call is 844-843-6879. You know, listen, Scott, I like Duke Johnson. I like Chris Thompson. You know, I do think Theo Riddick, listen, Kenny is right, but I agree with you. I think he's maybe like a year later. So remember, he also had that injury with the wrists, I believe it was, Theo Riddick, you know, and he's been in the league for a while. So
he tends to get banged up. He does.
Yeah.
That's another part
absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. So,
point.
You know, we'll see. You know what I'm also thinking? Remember last year in Minnesota, a guy like Jerick McKinnon, and he parlayed that into a big-time contract over there in San Francisco. You know, so we'll see if he can kind of keep up when he's more of the main guy this year out west. Hey, Scotty, I know it is football. It is big-time football. But we do, for the people that are still playing fantasy baseball and are still competitive in their leagues, like Scott, like Speeds, we want to give people a little bit of an injury roundup, because listen, there were some big ones yesterday. I mean, Chris Bryant with the shoulder, Lorenzo Cain, Dylan Bundy, and some others. What do you got there, Scott, the infirmary report?
Yeah, Bryant on the 10-day DL retroactive to June 23rd with a shoulder injury. Carlos Correa dealing with back stiffness. He's day-to-day. Yeah. Nelson Cruz scratched yesterday with back tightness. Lorenzo Cain goes on the DL with a left groin strain. And they called up Keon Broxton, so you may want to pick him up for some possible speed in the interim. Josh Donaldson gets suffering a setback and will be reevaluated in 3 weeks' time. JT Realmuto has missed 2 straight games with a hand injury. Brandon Morrow said he expects to be back today from the DL. Dylan Bundy going on the DL with a left ankle sprain. Anibal Sanchez leading yesterday's start against the Reds with right calf problems. Ronald Guzman going on the concussion list for 7 days. Daniel Mankin going on the 10-day DL retroactive to June 23rd with a foot problem. Chad Kuhl leaving the game against the Mets last night after 4 innings with forearm tightness. And Mike Trout, just something to keep an eye on, but not bad news. Served as the Angels DH again yesterday as he deals with a finger injury. He's now been the DH in 7 consecutive games for the Angels.
Interesting. If you're a fantasy player, you're still getting his bat in the lineup, and that's really what you care about. I'm intrigued, though, Scott, by this Josh Donaldson one, you know, because we've been talking. Remember when we were talking baseball, we were talking about when they bring up Vlad Guerrero Jr., that sort of stuff, and how in the last year of his deal, Donaldson really looked like a potential trade piece. If he's not even going to be reevaluated for 3 weeks, that puts us pretty much like in the middle of July, not then a lot of time to try to potentially flip him for Toronto. So I find that one very interesting, Scotty.
Yeah, and Guerrero is hurt himself, and
right.
Donaldson's been getting hurt a lot over the past few years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like he
probably will
down,
not be
actually.
Able. Yeah, you know, when you talked about like kind of the off season, you know, coming up with the Harper deal and so many of these guys that were thought to be able to cash in big time, the Machados of the world, you know, you see Charlie Blackman already go and get his deal. I'm not so sure that Josh Donaldson is going to get this mega deal that a lot of people thought of. Remember, he is, unlike Machado, unlike Harper, he is already in his 30s. All right, let's keep it moving, though, Scotty. I know you had a chance to spend a couple of minutes with Dodgers closer Kenley Jansen, and you told me that it's a really strong interview. I'm excited to hear this. He talks a lot also about his countrymen, right? People like Didi Gregorius down there in the Netherlands. Antilles.
Yes, and a wide-ranging interview. He's also a big Green Bay Packers fan. He grew up watching Brett Favre.
All right, let's hear about that. As you know, Scotty, get cue the Mr. Ed. Let's hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Kenley Jansen with the King, Scott Angle, here on Roto Experts in the Morning.
Scott Engel with Kenley Jansen. Kenley, a little bit of a bumpy start to the regular season for you, but then you turn into the Kenley Jansen we all know. When things weren't going quite your way early in the season, was it anything mechanically or pitch selection wise, and how did you correct things?
I think it's just rust. I wasn't ready. They was. And, you know, it's just, I got accepted, man. Like, my hammy was bugging me that time. You know, that kind of pushed me back in spring training, that I start really late and not having that enough inning in spring training. I'm not making an excuse. I hate doing that, but it's just the realistic of it. I wasn't quite off ready yet. And, you know, that hurt. But, you know, I just stay tough mentally and know that I can do the job and believe in myself. And here I am, you know, I just turn it around. So that's the one thing that motivate me when, you know, media was on me and, you know, try to make me like feel the heat or whatever. That kind of give me a kind of edge of motivation and to show everybody that, you know, who I am. And, you know, stuff can happen, you know, and the fact that, you know, it happened with me early this year, you know, just that's a good thing for me to just kind of know myself and see if I can turn the season around and know who I am and see, you know, that I could do the job. And, you know, here I am having a great season again.
You talk about being mentally tough. You know, we've talked about this before. You see so many guys around the leagues, like, losing their closer job, not just for injury, but for performance. Do you believe that you have to be mentally tough to be a closer?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean,
is it different than the other ones?
Let me tell you, that April was rough. I mean, yeah, it was rough for me everywhere. I mean, we're talking about giving up 3-run lead, giving up a 2-run lead, giving up a homer to panic, lose the game. I won't forget that, you know. I mean, it was, hey, let me tell you, it was tough. But that's the one thing I'm not going to let that taking advantage of me is my mind. I always will make sure I have control over my mind and stay strong and believe in yourself, visualize it. That's the one thing that helped me a lot, too, having a guy like Dave Roberts as our manager, that, you know, every time I go to him on my tough time, my rough time, talk to him, and he just keep feeding me with the positive stuff. And, you know, when I was thinking too much mechanics, he was telling me to visualize how to close the game like he used to do it last year. And I started doing it, and you don't think about mechanics, you don't think about anything, and next thing you know, you start closing games out. So that's the one thing I keep doing. Stay positive, make sure I'm, you know, my mind is tough, and visualize a lot of tough, positive thoughts, and visualize how you close the game, and that helped me tremendously.
Does a closer have to have a different mentality than another type of relief pitcher? There's talk about a closer mentality. I've talked to you about it in the past and other closers. Do you have to have a different mentality to be consistently effective in the ninth inning?
Oh yeah, you have to. I mean, you gotta put things through your past. You gotta very short memory. You gotta make that switch. You're talking about, you know, for me to say my experience when that happened, I stay a little bit longer in the clubhouse. Why I'm staying a little longer in the clubhouse? Because I don't want to take it home with me to my family. So once I leave that family, I already switch my mind to tomorrow and just go to my kids and my wife and have a great time at home and come back the next day positive and try to do it again. So to me, you gotta have that mindset. And, you know, you can't put pressure on yourself, and, you know, you gotta go out there and do the job. That's the thing about closing. You know, to other middle relievers, I mean, the ball's in your hand, the game is on your hand. You know, you're either gonna lose it or win it.
Now, you talk about home, you talk about family. You know, there's a lot of guys, your countrymen, who've been very successful, like Jonathan Scope and Didi Gregorius. Do you follow those guys? Do you keep in touch with those guys? And is it a sense of pride when people who come from where you do, you know, are doing well in the majors?
You know, I follow them all the time. I don't stay in contact. Like with Jonathan, once in a while I talk to him. But the other guys, I don't. Like Simmons once in a while, but I love watching them, man. I love watching Didi putting numbers, putting good stuff, represent us, represent the flag, and, you know, represent Derek Jeter, man. I mean, you know, that's the great thing to see how Didi is doing it. Jonathan Scope is really doing it. I mean, this year is a little bit battle for him with his, you know, I talked to him a little bit about, you know, his injuries. That kind of slowed him down a little bit. But Simmons, you know, he's just killing it over there. And, you know, talk about three-time Gold Glove, one of the best shortstop in the league, him and Didi. And Jurickson Profar, man, I love seeing how he's coming a long way. I mean, you know, he's tried to find his, you know, his shots to be in the big leagues. And the fact that sometimes, you know, for him, the luck didn't run too much with him. But now that he's getting his chance, you know, he's doing it. So I'm very proud to see, you know, all those guys from Curacao doing it. And either Bogarts, I love watching him. He's not a guy, you know, even though he's from Aruba, I kind of feel like it's our country. So we're the same people, and, you know, watching them doing it, man, it make me happy and feel proud to be be from Curacao, and it's proud to see, you know, Bogarts doing it. It make me proud to see how, you know, how he represent Aruba.
So, not that you know how it works, but in fantasy baseball, you're one of the top closers picked. You're one of the first guys picked. When they have an auction, usually people spend the most money on you and Aroldis Chapman. How do you react when you hear that? When people say, hey, you know, Kenley Jansen, I drafted you for my fantasy baseball team. You're one of my top picks.
I really don't think about that, but that's awesome. That's an honor, to be honest with you. That showed me that I come a long way. Never thought a guy from Curacao, dream, want to play in the major league. Growing up watching the Braves play in the 90s, and, you know, I come a long way, man, and see myself now in the big leagues, and, you know, people want to have me in their fantasy draft. That's awesome. That's a dream come true. So I'm just keep living it, live every moment of this major league, and try to be the best every day I can be.
Last one for you. I know you're a Packers fan. We already talked about it. How are you feeling about the team this year? Aaron Rodgers is back healthy. No Jordy Nelson. He's in Oakland, and we're not sure who's going to start at running back.
Oh, man. You know, this year I kind of feel a little uncomfortable about it, to be honest with you. So, you know, they kind of got rid of all Aaron Rodgers guys, and that kind of – I kind of don't like that, to be honest with you. So, hopefully, you know, he will stay as a Packers, because losing Aaron Rodgers won't be great either, you know. So, hopefully he stays. And we'll see, man. We'll see how it goes this year, man. Last year was rough, you know, see him down most of the time. You know, but we keep support, keep loving them, and hopefully this year they can put it together and make a run out of it.
So there you have it, King Scott Angle with Dodgers closer Kenley Jansen. He doesn't seem too optimistic on the Packers this year, huh, Scotty?
No, I assured him that Aaron Rodgers is going to stay.
Aaron Rodgers isn't going anywhere, yeah.
But I think right before the interview started, I told that Jordy Nelson was a Raider, and he was very upset. I don't think. Well, he wasn't very upset, but he was just like, "Oh, what are you talking? Oh, really? No way!" You know, he's like trying. He hasn't quite caught up on the personnel moves yet, but he was disappointed to hear that Jordy was gone.
Yeah, absolutely. But great interview. You know, everything from kind of the mental side of the game. He talked about how he like stays in his locker room even after if it's a bad game. He doesn't want to bring it home with him. He talks about all those guys from Aruba, Curacao. You know, he mentioned Profar, Didi, Andrelton Simmons as well. A lot of these AL shortstops. We've been talking about kind of this renaissance at AL shortstop. And Scotty, I don't know if you know this, but I dropped a fantasy sports rap verse, and in that verse, one of those lines is "Balling so hard, I got the Benz and the mansion. I saved the day for LA like I'm Kenley Jansen." So,
nice.
You know, I gotta get a little bit of love for Kenley Jansen.
Yeah. We can work with that. You know, it's like
we got a whole track. You gotta listen to it, man.
some people, they like to call me an old codger, but I don't care. I'm just going to hang out with the Dodger.
The Dodgers. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I got to send you the track. We debuted it on FNTSY yesterday. I got to send that to you, Scotty. We also got a poll question up. Okay, the face of baseball semifinals are going on. Scotty, we got the one seed, Bryce Harper, against the four seed, Mike Trout. Mike Trout right now, though, has 94% of the vote, Scotty, over Bryce Harper. The winner here will meet Jose Altuve in the final. Are you surprised by the margin of this one, Scotty? Mike Trout, 94-6 right now.
Maybe that's reflective on how Bryce Harper is playing as well.
Maybe.
Maybe that has something to do with it because Harper's playing so much better. I think a lot of the people who vote kind of take how the guys are playing into account as well.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're thinking who's the better player, but that plays into a part of like who's more visible because if you're playing better, you're going to be talked about more positively.
Absolutely. As my man Herman Edwards once said, the best ability is availability, all right? But let's keep it moving, Scotty, because listen, Mike Leone, we talked about the zero RB theory. Now, there's a flip side to this, right? There's the idea of zero wide receiver theory, okay? And that would be just like we talked about with running back. Correct me if I'm wrong, Scott. That would be waiting until, like you said, round, say, like, you know, five, let's say, roughly, you know, to go ahead and take your first wide receiver.
I would say
loading up on
running
back. I
would say more four in the case of wide receivers.
Loading up on running
back. You don't start
any
more than three running backs.
Fair enough. But at the same time, kicking the can down the road there for the wide receiver position. And, you know, it's interesting. I've had a theory for a long time. I don't know if you've heard me say it on Fantasy Sports Network, Scott. I call it the fantasy herd, right? And, like, the herd is, like, this whole big group, you know. I think about, for example, like, the Chargers. Well, before Keenan Allen kind of popped off. Where I think about the change of the Lions, right, from when they started being, you know, Stafford used to focus on Megatron all the time. Then after Calvin Johnson went, you know, you had a Marvin Jones, you have a Golden Tate, you have a Theo Riddick, you have an Eric Ebron, and this kind of proliferation of offenses that are spreading it out and kind of diminishing the value of that top wide receiver one outside of obviously the elite guys, you know, your ABs, your DeAndre Hopkins, and the like. Mike Leone says that is part of the reason that the zero wide receiver theory is plausible here because, listen, there's so many spread offenses where quarterbacks are not keying in on one guy. You see them at the line all the time, Scotty, you know, going kill, 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 Omaha. They're like picking out the matchup that they like, whether that's in the slot or changing the play at the line to just go for a matchup. They are not going about people. They are going for matchups, and that kind of spreads the production around, making it almost kind of like, you know, we talk about committees and timeshares for running backs. It's almost like because the quarterback is able to change the play and find the matchups, we have tons of wide receiver committees in the NFL. And if you have a lot of committees, that means you have less elite wide receiver one types. Right, Scotty?
I believe the best quarterbacks in football spread the ball around effectively.
Right.
The different receivers, Drew Brees in his prime, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, guys like that. They're going to hit the open man. But for even those guys, you know, there is one preferred receiver, and every team would prefer to have an all-pro guy to pretty much lead that crew. I'm more into the zero wide receiver theory than I am into this, the zero running back theory than I am into the wide receiver theory because I found it's won me more leagues. You know, I've especially in a PPR league, when you can rack up three outstanding pass catchers, running backs sometimes tend to be less predictable. So I'm more comfortable with doing that. It's like I don't want my number one wide receiver necessarily to be, say, a Golden Tate or a Marvin Jones or somebody like that, or a Michael Crabtree. To me, there are guys who are identically identifiable as wide receiver ones, wide receiver twos, etc. I'm not a fan, really, of the zero wide receiver theory.
Okay, so you like going out and getting that stud early on. Is that to say, Scotty, in some of your drafts this year, you may go more like I mean, obviously it depends on any specific context and who's available at that moment in time. But are you thinking about trying to go more wide receiver early on because of all this spread and all these kind of, you know, these coaches, the quarterbacks, like you said, they're letting the matchup and the play and the defense dictate where the ball goes. That's actually good quarterback play instead of having your eyes locked in on someone all the time. That's actually, you know, better for your real life team. So because of that, are you going to maybe prioritize some of these stud wide receivers in the first round, a Beckham, a Devontae Adams, a Michael Thomas? You know, are you going to prioritize those guys over, say, a Kareem Hunt? Like, if you're being faced with, you know, Kareem Hunt and Odell Beckham, are you going wide receiver because of that? Because you think you don't want, you want to make sure you get a stud wide out?
No. It's never a locked-in strategy. It's about what we talked about, letting the draft come to you. There's no one way to do it. There's no one way to prefer it. People will say, should I go wide receiver, running back in the first four rounds? There's no set pattern because it depends on your slot. It depends on the flow of the draft. So I can never say that there's one way that I'm going to lead in going, because if you look at my new ranks on rotoexperts.com, my top four is a running back. My fifth is a wide receiver. So it really depends on who's available at what point and, you know, what's the flow of the draft? You know, is a value running back? Am I picking at 11 and then I'll be able to pick off a real, right, like around a Melvin Gordon and then come back and then maybe, you know, another top-tier running back that I like a lot is there in the second round? Then I'm not going to go wide receiver at all. Every single draft is different. Every single mock draft is different.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no hard and fast rule here. You got to see what happens in that specific context. But see, Mike Leone over here at RotoExperts.com in the Roto Edge, in the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge draft package, giving you a lot of insight and kind of defining zero RB theory and zero running back, and zero wideout theory, and kind of the pros and cons, the implications, the definitions. And he also gives you a great kind of breakdown statistically over the last few years in terms of their bust rate and what may be a way you can go. But Scotty Angle is absolutely right. You have to, you know, kind of see it in that specific context and do what feels right to you. Also, I got to tell you guys, listen, if you want to maybe win a chance to go to a 2018 World Series game, you already know by now. Tune into the Fantasy Sports Network between July 8th and July 17th. We'll be playing the DKMS Trivia Challenge. It's your shot to call in and win a chance to attend the Fall Classic in person. The number to play is 844-843-6879. You could call in just like Kenny and Philly did today. We will be asking you questions. If you are the winner, you can get two tickets to the Fall Classic. Maybe the Yankees will be there. Maybe the Astros will be there. Maybe Kenley Jansen and the Dodgers will be there. The contest is sponsored by DKMS. We're looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer, okay? You already know only 30% of patients can find the matching donor. That's where you help. You register. You swab your cheeks. You could become a match and really help someone struggling with this disease, not in the fantasy world, but in the real world. Go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS. DailyRoto.com/DKMS. Scotty, I'm excited about that. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing the trivia challenge. You think, because I know they struggled, our listeners, last time, but I think they're going to surprise us this year. I think they're, you know, doing their research, getting ready.
It depends on who the listener is. If it's Cha-Cha, I have no confidence. If it's Kenny,
shots fired to Cha-Cha. Yeah. Listen, yeah. I know all my guys in the Stats Overbeat Cypher are going to be ready to rock and call in. And remember, if you want to holler and talk to us about football, the number to call is 844-843-6879. All right, Scotty, tomorrow we're going to dig into a couple of we'll dig into a couple of other articles potentially, and we'll also have Mike Leone himself on our air here in this spot. So we'll ask him a few more questions about zero RB and zero wideout theory. All right there, Scott? Have a great day, brother man.
Okay. You too.
All right. The All-In Kid, Jake Seeley, joins the fun when we come back. It is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Come on right back.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hour number two, Mings, we bring in the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. Jake, how you doing today, brother man? We got an interesting poll up. I don't know if it warrants your lobbying or not, but we're in the semifinals, Jake, of this Face of Baseball tournament, and we got the route is on. Mike Trout is boat racing Bryce Harper right now. Last I checked, it was like 80-20. How you doing, Jake? Is this a surprise to you? Is this margin a surprise to you so far?
No, it's not a surprise to me at this point of the polls. It's just, again, it's ever since we reached the second round, it's clear that people don't understand the concept of the poll.
Fair enough. It looks like it will wind up, we'll have a final, it looks like, of Jose Altuve and Mike Trout. Yes, the
and
word.
That's fine. Like, Mike Trout should be the face of baseball.
Legit, yeah.
But he's not the face of baseball. It's just a fact. He's, unfortunately, because the media coverage and he plays on the West Coast, and you can say the East Coast bias, but it's just the fact that America's not up to watch him play. He's not on TV as much as he should be, and Bryce Harper is, and Bryce Harper is more recognizable. Again, since we hit the second round, it's clear that people don't understand the concept. They're going for stats because the better stats have won every single time. The better face hasn't.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we always have to do these things about defining it for people, you know. It's similar with, you know, we talked a little bit about the MVP award yesterday, how people interpret the word value a lot differently, whether that is right to do so. But hey, the people make their voice heard, and right now Mike Trout is boat racing Bryce Harper, like I said. Jake, let's talk about some news and notes here. We got a big hour, okay? We're going to have Mike Leone later on in the hour trying to help you win a little bit of cash. Coming off, remember, listen, a millionaire winner was from Daily Roto on the U.S. Open just a couple of weeks ago, so we'll get you ready for the PGA DFS this week. We're also going to keep our team-by-team previews going. We stay in the NFC South.
Is it Leone or is it Colin Drew?
Excuse me, it is Colin Drew. You're absolutely right. I had Leone on the brain, Jake, because in the last hour, Scott and I talk about a different, you know, article from the Exclusive Edge package, and we talked about Mike Leone's zero RB, zero wide receiver kind of theory. I know you have been strong saying that the zero RB is not really a great strategy, that it happened to kind of have the perfect storm work one year where you had injuries to the top guys. You had, you know, the Todd Gurley year when he only played like 12-13 games, something like that. So I had Leone on the brain, and Leone will be here tomorrow in the 7 o'clock hour with the king, Scott Angle. But yes, Jake, we are talking golf. But I do want to ask you this about the zero RB and the zero wideout theory. So you serve a seamless transition, Jake. I'm kind of intrigued by this zero wide receiver theory. And, you know, the part of the rationale that Leone gives, you know, is because something that I have called the fantasy herd for a while, you know, and Scott kind of agreed in the last hour. I want to get your take on it. You know, we see now the best quarterbacks in the league, Jake, they're getting to the line and they're letting the defense dictate where the ball goes. They're letting matchups dictate where the ball goes. You know, you hear them at the line all the time between Peyton Manning's Omaha and the kill, kill, kill. You know, that's what quarterbacks are doing. It's a game of matchups now. That is very different than a game of, you know, lock in on a guy like Calvin Johnson. Lock in on your number one receiver. There are very few, you know, use the term workhorse running backs. There are very few elite kind of workhorse wide receivers. You know, I think about, say, an A.J. Green. I think about a DeAndre Hopkins. I think about a Devontae Adams, potentially Keenan Allen, you know, but a lot of these teams now have what I call the fantasy herd, letting the matchup and the quarterback and the defense dictate where the ball goes. I feel like the days of the true elite wide receiver may be going away with these spread offenses, so maybe it is smart to kick the can down the road and draft wide receiver a little bit later. What's your take on this and kind of the evolution of spread offenses and what that means for the elite wide receiver class in fantasy, Jake?
I don't think we're going that far. I think the fact is, though, is, you know, it's similar to the running back situation and almost makes the workhorse, if you want to call them wide receiver, it makes them more important because there's so few of them. It's funny, you say that, and Emory Hunt was DMing me in like kind of almost like a rage fest last night, and he's right. Oh, yeah. He's just talking about like he's kind of tired of how football is today, and it all started because he was talking that he's a fan of Tariq Cohen, and he said Tariq Cohen's the better running back than Jordan Howard, but about today's NFL because everybody's got a role and everybody fits a scheme and everybody fits these plays and does that. Similar to what you're saying about matchups, even at wide receivers, instead of just being the best player on the team and used the most because you are the best player. And if you had play, and his whole point is if you have player A or player B, who's getting me more yards if I give him the ball? If it's right. player A, he needs to be on the field. I use the best player. You know, you can spell him because you don't, you know, give him 50 touches a game. But you, the player who gives you more should be the one as in who's the better talent. And that's the, it's just going on. We went back and forth about it. He was talking about some of the guys he played with. And like Charles Tillman was actually moved to running back for a brief time and then moved back to corner and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
Because he was just a great, yeah, because he was a great talent when he played. But I think that's what you're seeing. And that's what you're talking about. And that's what you're getting into with the wide receivers. With the wide receivers, it's not, you know, force feed 15 targets to my best wide receiver anymore. Now, like Calvin Johnson, the one thing about Matthew Stafford, it used to be funny and joke about it, is that he would throw to him even when he was triple right. covered. And yet Calvin Johnson came down with the ball because Calvin Johnson was a monster. But as to your point is, it's kind of this new age NFL of next gen stats and all this type of stuff, which are good, but they're a small piece of the puzzle. And to your point, if we're moving in this direction, I'm going to go back to the running backs where it's all going to depend on where I'm drafting, obviously. But if there are fewer and fewer wide receivers that are seeing 120-plus targets, it's going to make it even more important to grab one of those and get some type of consistency.
Yeah, I hear you, Jake, and it seems like it's the same at the running back position. You know, like there's an elite few who are going to get you that kind of consistency and that kind of production, and then all of a sudden you're in this kind of mishmash of the herd wherever the quarterback decides. And I think, to be honest, to this point, I think Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions is a perfect example. Yes, he would force feed Megatron the ball, right? And now I think the Lions, at least like the last couple of years, were really the prototypical what I called the herd. You never knew on any given week, would it be Golden Tate? Would it be Eric Ebron? Would it be Marvin Jones? Would it be Theo Riddick? Everybody, you know, one week, as you know, Jake, Kenny Golladay would pop up and then everybody would be like, oh my God, Kenny Golladay. I'm like, nah, nah, nah. He's just part of the herd. But at the same time, a lot of people, Matthew Stafford included, has said that, you know, not for fantasy teams, but as a NFL quarterback, his development was better. He became a better quarterback when you removed kind of like, for lack of a better term, the crutch that was Megatron, right? Because he could just chuck it up to Calvin Johnson and he would come down with the ball. So that almost kind of like took the thinking out of it for Matthew Stafford, but he has developed into what he thinks is a better quarterback because he has to actually read defenses and move people with his eyes, you know, and audible out. And these are skills that he wants as a quarterback instead of just having to rely on the freak that was Calvin Johnson, right?
Right. So you're basically diminishing what Matthew Stafford does?
No, I'm saying that Matthew Stafford is a better quarterback now. I was diminishing what Matthew Stafford
That's
did.
What I'm saying.
Back in the day.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, I'm with
you. I'm thinking that he's actually a better quarterback
now.
Yeah,
because it's since you say that, it was one of the things that, you know, I had said at the time was that was my concern. Without Calvin Johnson, is Matthew Stafford going to be the same quarterback? Is he going to try to force feed Golden Tate, which isn't going to work the same? So I'm with you.
Right.
Like, I used to joke and say that all Matthew Stafford really does is just heave the ball downfield 35, 40 times a game, and it works because you have Calvin Johnson. So, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. And I was on the same page as that.
Matthew
Stafford had to grow as a quarterback in order to keep throwing as well as continue his success.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, there are some teams like that. So consider that, excuse me, when drafting these wide receivers, it's similar to running back. You got these elite few, and then there's just, you know, I don't want to call it like a wide receiver committee or a wide receiver timeshare, but, you know, on some level, the analogy holds. If you're not getting these elite talent on a week to week, it could be a little bit of whack-a-mole. Hey, Jake, we got that rookie cycle. I'm going to call it the Sealy cycle or the Sealy Clay cycle at this point in time. Buzz about rookie running backs and will the talent win out? In Washington, they are now saying that they would be quote-unquote surprised if Darius Geis is not the starting running back. And then in your daily news about Cleveland Browns running backs, we're saying here now that Nick Chubb has quote-unquote a chance to start. I mean, Jake, again, we know this is June, right? But like, I also have a chance. Like, they're so vague with this stuff, right? He's got a chance to start. Great. So does Carlos Hyde. So does Duke Johnson, I guess. I guess there's a chance they go five wide open, you know, as well. What do you take out of this? Is this still just the same old buzz from these kind of rookie cycles, like you're talking about Chubb with a chance to start? They're hyping up Darius Geis in Washington. Kind of same old news. This is what we think about this rookie cycle and the news that comes out, Jake.
Yeah, this is just what we go through every single year. This is kind of, at this point, told you so. And I was not trying to be like, I told you so. But at this not even to you. I'm just saying in general. It's like, this is what we do every single year. It's the cycle, like you said, whatever you want to call it. At this point, I'm not changing it either with the Chubb news. Like, so for the Geis thing, that was always going to happen. Geis is going to lead that backfield. That's just stupid for any process by the Redskins that doesn't involve Dice leading that backfield is stupid, right, on their part, because they already got Chris Thompson hurt. Chris Thompson is great. Chris Thompson is Theo Riddick, and that's not a slight to Chris Thompson, especially in fantasy. Theo Riddick was an RB2 in PPR for year after year after year, and not like just barely an RB2. He was a rock-solid RB2. Sure. He only had a few weeks where he was scoring 3 or 4 points because, you know, 3 or 4 catches get you those 3. He has to get no yards on those. So to say that about Chris Thompson is not slighting him in any way. It's just the fact that people saw what he did when he had the backfield to himself, essentially, and thought that Chris Thompson could be a lot more. And it's not. He's going to get killed if you do that to him. So the same thing as Theo Riddick. Theo Riddick never gets 20 touches because you're going to get him killed. So the fact is, as you look at it, Darius Geis is only going to lead that backfield. This news about Nick Chubb, no kidding. I know that he could lead that backfield. If you're talking about pure talent, he is the most talented running back. I know he could be the lead. I've also admitted to you and said on this very show, on the On Target podcast, on Fantasy Football Frenzy, up and down the line, where I am one of the highest people on Nick Chubb, but I will openly admit that Carlos Hyde is a bigger threat than Latavius Murray was to Dalvin Cook. Nick Chubb might not take over to the middle of the season. If Carlos Hyde somehow stays healthy for 16 games, he might never ever take over, period, and it could be a committee for the entire year. It's just out of that committee, I want the person going for less, and that's Nick Chubb, because he's going after Carlos Hyde, who happens to also have the most talent.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, if you're in this kind of situation, might as well try and get the guy that would represent the value, and that would be the guy who is kind of with the less buzz around them. Whoever's going later, if you actually think it could be this kind of full-blown committee. You know, similar, your talk about Chris Thompson, though, Jake. You know, you mentioned how they don't want to sustain him, but he is this great pass catching back. You mentioned Theo Riddick. Listen, in Cleveland, they got another one in Duke Johnson, and almost to have Chubb and Hyde is almost to preserve, you know, Duke Johnson a little bit. Let me ask you this, Jake, and I know we've talked about the Cleveland Browns running back situation more than anyone could possibly imagine, but what about prioritizing Duke Johnson? If you think, because we've talked about the roles, right? And we know that Chubb and Hyde are going to kind of be these early town guys, right? And Johnson is one of these PPR bosses, a la Theo Riddick, a la Chris Thompson out there. And at least his role is more clearly defined. It's like when we talked about in New Orleans, like they're going to keep Kamara in that role. And that's why they go out and get a Terrence West even to replace Melvin Ingram. Mark Ingram, they're not going to give more to Kamara necessarily. What about if Chubb and Hyde do kind of, you know, battle it out? Could Duke Johnson be actually the most stable pick of the Browns running backs? I mean, especially in PPR leagues, Jake?
Well, just basically in PPR. And he probably will be the most stable in PPR because he's pretty much the best pass-catching running back in the NFL, and people don't realize that, how good he is. So, yeah, that's definitely what could happen is if you're looking for – I'm not non-PPR, no, because he can get left out of any type of game script, any type of week, and that's what happens when you have these. Same thing with Theo Riddick. Is Theo Riddick, he gets dinged a heck of a lot in non-PPR because now – 3 catches for 17 yards that week, which is a down week for him. Now you're talking about 1.7 in on PPR, whereas, you know, 4.7 doesn't hurt as much in PPR. So that's why. That's just the truth of Theo Riddick. That's the same thing with Duke Johnson. As much as I love Duke Johnson, I've always been a huge Duke Johnson fan. That's just the fact of the matter is you're going to get killed in non-PPR some weeks. So, yeah, and PPR, he's probably the most stable. He's got also a lower ceiling because Hyde or Chubb or both of them are going to be in that backfield. The biggest issue you have here is what you don't want to have happen, is that we potentially are headed towards a true which is Scott always gets mad about this. timeshare is two running backs. Anything yep. more, three plus, is a committee. Well, this is looking like, as of today, a committee to start, and it's a committee is always frustrating in fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a full-on committee. Two is a timeshare. Three or more is a committee. Jake, we have to come up, though, with a new phrase for the Jets wide receiver room, okay? It's more than a committee. So we got to figure out what that one is. Last piece of news that I want to bounce off you, Jake. And listen, I'm not going to go too deep into the story. It was reported by TMZ and then later on confirmed. A dead body was found in Janoris Jenkins' house. Listen, Jackrabbit Janoris Jenkins is not being investigated for any kind of criminality. He's been out of state, down in Florida for minicamp. I just think it's interesting, so we do have to report it. Jake, here's how I want to kind of spin it forward for a fantasy question for you. Last year, I saw what the New Orleans Saints were trying to do, okay? With an aging quarterback and a better running game, they were evolving to the running game, not only to help save Drew Brees, but also for that defense. That, you know, the offense in New Orleans last year had a much better time of possession, had much better field position, and that allowed the New Orleans Saints defense, along with very shrewd drafting, of course, guys like Lattimore and the like, that allowed that defense to really take a step up last year. But not a lot of people realize how much impact the offense and specifically the running game has on that. Now, when I think about Janoris Jenkins, you know, I think about the Giants defense. And when I think about the Giants defense last year, I think about them getting lit up over and over again. Guys like Jared Goff in the rain killing them. You know what I mean? So my question for you is, what kind of impact does Saquon Barkley have, not only for this Giants offense, not only to help Odell Beckham and Eli Manning, but what could it potentially do for the Giants defense this year?
Not enough. I mean, it's just a fact. I mean, he can help. Anytime you keep the ball out of the opponent's hands, it can help, and that's going to help your defense stay on the field less, which is going to keep them fresher, help them play more intense, because the fact is defenses, especially defensive linemen, just they physically can't go 100% every single play. Otherwise, they're just going to get worn out and there's going to be zero pressure. That's why you see teams when they're late in the game and no huddle and they can't get people back off the field. I mean, that's the strategy. Anybody right. who watches football knows that. So if you're on the field less, you can give 100% more often. And I'm not talking about the 110 mythical percentage that doesn't exist, but I'm just talking about giving 100% and going at it. The problem is, it's like he can only do so much. And the biggest thing is, if this does have any ramifications where it does actually involve Janoris Jenkins and Janoris Jenkins isn't on this team for some reason, or isn't
that means
playing
Eli
for
Apple.
Some reason. Well, and that's the thing is, this the corner was already an issue for the Giants. The corner's an issue right now, even if Jenkins is playing. You're talking about Jenkins, Eli Apple, and they signed a bunch of retread journeymen. Honestly, there's not like there's no question
they don't
about
have
it.
DRC
look at the guys
anymore?
No, he's not there anymore. Okay. They might be forced to bring him back at this point if something happens. But they're bringing up pieces from the Steelers. They're picking up, you know, practice squad guys, things off rosters, undrafted players. Their corners are pretty much terrible behind those two. So if you lost Jenkins, who is a arguably top 10 corner in the league, mm-hmm. and possibly top five, I mean, they're in deep trouble.
Yeah, I would say that it is important to note there is no kind of indication that there is any foul play involving Janoris Jenkins, but it is interesting, and we'll see what happens with the Giants' defense moving forward. All right, Jake, because we have Colin Drew on later, we got to get to our team preview, and that today is the Tampa Bay Bucks. Listen, we have talked, Jake, about the Bucks a lot recently because of the news that came out with Jameis Winston. Looks like he's going to be suspended. There's still kind of varied reports. Will it be one game, three games? I've heard even potentially more because of an incident with an Uber driver. I could see, you know, there's reports out there, Jake, that the league could treat this very similar to an Ezekiel Elliott infraction, which was a 6-game suspension, if you want to know the truth. So we shall see when that comes out, but we do expect Winston to miss time. We've talked about Winston. We've talked about his fantasy value, his real life value for the Bucks. We've also talked about the impact that it had on Mike Evans, that we don't necessarily expect it much. Here's what I want to bounce off of you, Jake, as we talk about the Bucks. Last year, correct me if I'm wrong, but when Winston was in, Cameron making America great again was really a solid tight end option. But for some reason, when Fitzpatrick was in, didn't it seem like he had something of a rapport with what was at the time rookie tight end out of Alabama, O.J. Howard? So I wonder, Jake, does that make maybe O.J. Howard a decent like DFS play the first couple of weeks? Might they have some kind of chemistry that they worked on in the on the backfield when the twos were running with the twos or something like that? Talk to me a little bit about O.J. Howard. Do you see potential for him to take a step forward? One, just because he's in the second year of his career, and a lot of times we see that with tight ends. But also, maybe he's got a little something. Maybe the magic is going with Fitzpatrick.
Oh, the thing is, so everybody's been talking about what's the impact and where the fallout is and stuff like that. And we've already discussed, as you said, that Mike Evans, for me, doesn't take a step back. Maybe if you were trying to tie break him and Davante Adams, you go Davante Adams now or something like, you know, just like I said, a tie break situation. The fact is there is one effect, and I said that from the get-go. We haven't talked about it yet, but I talked to Corey about it on The Frenzy. Is you're right. You're 100% right. When Fitzpatrick came in, it wasn't Brate anymore. It was O.J. Howard. And this is what we say all the time. This is why I keep saying about the Chiefs, which we don't know that Tyreek Hill is definitively their number one this year. It might end up being Sammy Watkins. Mahomes has no ties to Tyreek Hill besides practicing some with him last year, but he wasn't practicing a lot with him because Alex Smith was practicing with him. So what if the rapport is there with Watkins and not with Hill, or there's just a better rapport there? So similar situation here is Fitzpatrick was just more comfortable with O.J. Howard than he was with Brate. A better rapport, whether they're on the same page more, maybe they're thinking the same way more, whatever it may be. The problem with the tight ends, it still comes down to, is a timeshare tight end situation. And the problem with O.J. Howard when he was drafted was not just that he was a rookie, it's the fact that O.J. Howard is a better pass blocker, which is to his detriment for fantasy. He is the better tight end. Cameron Brate is the better pass catcher. O.J. Howard could actually match him in pass catching as he develops. But the better blocking tight end is going to stay at the line of scrimmage more than the pass catcher who can't block as well. And that's to his detriment. But in the time that he did was going out in routes, he was seeing more targets from Fitzpatrick. So to your point, yeah, he could be a streamer. He could also get off on the right foot and continue to develop and end up passing Brate this year and be the better tight end. Again, the problem is I don't really want either of them because this kind of goes back to the Indianapolis Colts of Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener when he was there. Yep, and then after that, it was Dwayne Allen and Jack Doyle. When everybody remembers the Colts. When Fleener was the lead, it was he's getting yards, and then, oh, my gosh, damn it, I can't believe Dwayne Allen got the touchdown. And then all of a sudden, Dwayne Allen's getting the yards, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe Jack Doyle's getting the touchdowns. And then it's Jack Doyle, and it's like, oh, look, Eric Swoop stole a touchdown. So that's why I don't want to deal with this situation if I don't have to.
Yeah, fair enough, Jake. I mean, I'm racking my brain right now. Outside of Rob Gronkowski and the murderer, are there any times where you really saw an offense being able to support two tight ends for fantasy purposes?
No, because it's near impossible. And the fact is like even when you go back to that, Tom Brady, for one, throwing for 5,000 yards and 35, 40 plus touchdowns. Can sustain, but also you look at that offense, and it was basically a 12 offense, which is two tight ends for everybody out there. And Aaron Hernandez really wasn't a tight end. He wasn't. He was in a hybrid role. He was lined up wide. He was even Gronkowski. It wasn't like they were really. See, the difference between like a true 12, like in line tight ends is your ones lined up with the offensive lineman and the line of scrimmage. Like you see, typically he's got his hand down. And then the other one, if you have two out there, is on the other side, probably lined up off the line of scrimmage, but not that far away. Like, it's just people
not quite in the slot, in between the slot and
I wish I had like a board behind me. I could
whiteboard him up. Yeah. You can take him to Gruden quarterback camp and draw it
on. But there's times with them with Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez, neither one of them had their hands down in the turf because that's how the Patriots use them. So it's completely different situation.
Yeah, and that gives me cause for concern, actually. I think we talked about this when we talked to Indianapolis Colts. Remember, they went out and got Eric Ebron in the offseason, and so now you have Doyle and Ebron. And so the question remains, like, can that offense support two tight ends? When you think about it also, like you mentioned the hand in the ground. The other thing I'll give out there to try and give a picture for our listeners out there is think about when you have a guy going in motion. You know, think about when you have a guy going in motion in the play and kind of like how he ends up, you know, not quite all the way out the slot and kind of tucked in close to the line, but still, like you said, without his hand in the ground and ready to definitively run a route. Jake, I got to ask you, though, remember how when we did the odds for the first coach to be fired? And this was before the Winston suspension came out. And I said that Dirk Cutter at something, I believe he was something like 12 to 1 or between 12 and 15 to 1. I said that was an interesting idea. Now, listen, this could unravel for Jameis Winston. Look, and I know you're not big on the schedule, Jake, but if you look at their schedule, let's say he misses three games, the first three, right? Jake, this is tough for them. They start on the road for the New Orleans Saints and the home opener in the Dome. I don't see them standing up getting crunk in the home opener for the Saints. Their next two games are two of their eight home games, but Jake, it's the state of Pennsylvania coming into town, the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles, and then the Pittsburgh Steelers come to town without Jameis Winston. Like, and then they have an early bye early on in the season. They have a bye week 5. Jake, I can see this unraveling. I can see Fitzpatrick easily going 0-3. And then, you know, these guys don't seem – the guys like, you know, Jameis Winston, DeSean Jackson, I don't know. If they're losing – I think it could get a little bit ugly in Tampa Bay. The over-under on them is 6.5 this year, Jake. I'm a little bit worried that this can unravel, making Dirk Cutter that pick of first coach to be fired.
See, that's where I'll actually go the other direction, as I don't
really
know that they'll actually because I don't know how much blame he'll get if the fact that Jameis Winston's there. You know, they might get a pass because it's, you know,
you got that excuse.
Yeah, and then, but I mean, it's certainly possible. Like I said, I wasn't discounting Cutter from being one of the people who gets fired this year. I just think he's got some built-in excuses. That's my only thinking with that.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, Jake, this running back room, real quick. You know, Ronald Jones is one of these rookies that we talk about. Do you think he fits into the same category in terms of the talent will win out over Peyton Barber, Jack Quiz? Yeah.
Yes.
Where do you think he can wind up?
That's why I was saying yes before you even finished the question.
I know. We only got a minute left before a break, but you like Ronald Jones as one of these guys. Would you like Ronald Jones? I mean, go ahead.
Best talent in that backfield. It's not even a question. And there's no question to it. Peyton Barber was serviceable when they asked him to be last year. Peyton Barber's not built to – he's not. He doesn't have the talent. I'm not trying to be cruel. It's just the fact that you look at that backfield, nobody has the talent that Ronald Jones has. If Ronald Jones is healthy, it might only be in the 15 to 18 touch range leading that backfield, but he's going to be the best talent, best producer in that backfield.
Yeah, absolutely. The Tampa Bay Bucks think so as well. That's why they invested a high draft pick on him. Last one on this, Jake. Do you think that Peyton Barber and Charles Sims represent a bigger obstacle in Tampa than Devontae Booker does for Royce Freeman in Denver?
No.
No. Okay, so that means Ronald Jones all day long. We talk some golf right after this. It's Jake Seeley and the Spitting Statistician, Roto Experts in the Morning, right here in the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back to Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The all-in kid and the spitting statistician holding you down on a Wednesday. I got to let you guys know also, if you like playing daily fantasy sports, but you're sick of dealing with the professionals, using their formulas and their algorithms and their hundreds of lineups, try the Prop Builder tool over at mybookie.ag. You can literally create props on almost anything. All right, and you know, get yourself a little bit of extra cash. Go on over there right now. You could also enter the promo code FNTSY, and you'll get a 50% deposit bonus. That's mybookie.ag. Enter the promo code FNTSY for a 50% deposit bonus. Jake, real quick, before we get to Colin Drew, the over-under for the Tampa Bay Bucks is 6.5 over on mybookie.ag. Listen, Winston going to be missing out. We're talking about how it's viable that Cutter might be on a very short leash. This may be his end in Tampa Bay. Does that to say that you would take the under here, or would you pass on this line?
I'm passing the line. I'm surprised the line is still available until we know what the that it's not.
How many games?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
That's, yeah.
Question, real quick, a question, because you know about this prop builder tool that they got. Here's what I was wondering, and obviously you wouldn't win a lot of money. It'd be like betting on Floyd Mayweather to be Conor McGregor. But I was wondering, I was talking about this with Mike Florio, why couldn't we just build a prop and be like New England Patriots over 1.5 wins? You know, Green Bay Packers over 1.5 wins. You know, Arizona Cardinals less than 14.5 wins. You know, Baltimore Ravens less than 14, stuff like that. I know the payout wouldn't be good, but couldn't that just be like a short-term little putting my money in escrow for a couple of months?
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, the return probably, I would have to do it, right? And the return probably wouldn't be great.
Bond.
Yeah, but still, I know people, you know, people bet on those kind of 20-year bonds to give them to kids at their christening and stuff like that. Maybe I'll just give, like, my goddaughter, here's a futures ticket. Pats over 1.5 wins this season, you know? Have fun with that in 3 months. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. And if you could do that for almost every team in the league. But I digress. We're here with Colin Drew over representing Daily Roto. They make millionaires. They were doing it for the U.S. Open. So we're talking golf here. And listen, okay, if you're like, wait, this isn't a major. I don't want to play anymore. Let me tell you something. The dollars can be still used to buy goods and services, and so it is important to try to win that cash. We welcome Colin Drew in right now, representing Daily Roto. How you doing today, Colin?
Yeah, doing good. It's been a big few weeks. I know last time I was on, we had just had a couple people who'd finished in second place in the dog leg for 25K and 50K, but one of our subscribers tied for first in the Millionaire Maker at the U.S. Open, 575K. Pretty awesome. He, you know, was gracious enough to do a little interview with us. You can check that out over at Daily Roto, talking about how he kind of uses the tools and stuff. But good stuff going on. And like you said, there's still money to be made in DFS this week. And I think one of my biggest weeks this year was actually at the Volvo China Open for a European Tour event. So plenty of money to be made.
Sure, Volvo, it doesn't matter. Quicken Loans, I'll take it. Hey, listen, Colin, this seems to be, they said, the last field of the season, which is only 120 person instead of the usual like 150, 160 person. I always like to ask you about strategy, right? You know, because I don't want to just get a fish. I want to learn how to fish. With these smaller fields here, only 120 people, does that mean I load up more on the big boys, or do I try to find value at a lower price level? I know that like Tiger and Ricky Fowler are kind of the favorites this week. Do I go with them, or because of the smaller field, do I try to find value in that mid-tier?
Yeah, it's definitely dynamic depending on the week. And this week, I think it's a week that you want to load up on the top guys. There are a couple of reasons. One, you mentioned the 120-man field. I don't know how they would have filled out this tournament if it was a full field, because it's pretty weak. You got Fowler and Tiger up top, but then there's a big drop off in talent after that. And then the other thing is the venue this week. And we've only have 1 year of a sample size of the tour playing this tournament at this venue. It used to be held at Congressional, and we're at TPC Potomac at Avondale Farm this year, where the event was held last year. Last year actually played as the fourth toughest course on tour. And so it played harder than the US Open, played harder than the Players Championship. And that means there's not a lot of birdies to be had. And when there's not a lot of birdies, then the placement points and the bonuses for that are going to matter a lot more. So definitely starting with somebody like Ricky Fowler is a recommended approach for cash games, and definitely a viable approach for tournaments as well.
All right, so if you're building a tournament lineup, because that's what everybody always wants to do, they always want to try and win the big money. Are you looking to go stars and scrubs, or is the contrarian lineup going to be, you know, and maybe not, and maybe it's not the smart thing to do. The contrarian thing would be to like avoid those big names, like you just said, but that might not be the best approach because of the field this week.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two guys that we do like up top on DraftKings and tournaments. They're both going to be relatively popular, but even taking into account the ownership percentages on them, we still think that they're viable plays, and that's Ricky Fowler and Francesco Molinari. We actually have as a little bit better of a tournament play than Tiger Woods, just because his ownership's going to be lower and we have their top 20 probabilities roughly the same. And so if we are going to spend up and go with chalky players up top, then we would want to differentiate down below. I do think that one of the successful lineup strategies we've seen, though, is going with sort of a balanced contrarian approach, which, Jake, you're kind of recommending, where maybe you skip all the guys above $10,000 and you focus on some of the lower-owned guys that still have a reasonable probability to win. And, yeah, most weeks it's not going to work out. Most weeks the favorite's going to come through. But the weeks that it does work out, you're going to be kind of in the top 1% versus, you know, picking Fowler, he wins, and you're still just barely in the top 20th percentile. You're still fighting with all the other five golfers on your roster.
Fair enough. We're talking with Colin Drew here from DailyRoto.com. They make millionaires over there. We're talking a little bit of PGA action. You know, we got the Quicken Loans National up this week. Colin, you mentioned the course. And, you know, some of the stuff that I've read, it seems like, I don't know if it's because the course is longer or shorter or what the case is, but it seems like driving accuracy may be a little bit more important than just straight up bombing distance, right? Maybe it's because you need to be on the green because there's a lot of challenging second shots with the mid iron, stuff like that. So talk to me about driving range versus driving accuracy in this case here at the Quicken Loans National. And then also in general, like what kind of courses when you see them would lend itself to wanting to have the big bombers, and what kind of courses when you see them will lend itself to the guys who go, you know, on the straight and narrow?
Yeah, so I think the first thing when we think about things like that is just with the top end golfers, it really doesn't matter that much as far as what type of course it is. They're going to be able to win any given week. You know, yeah, it's a big advantage for Dustin Johnson to be able to hit driver, but even if he can't, he's still one of the best players with his wedge game and approach game and putting. And so, like, for the top end golfers, we don't really think about it. Definitely do think it matters a little bit more for some of the lower end guys. And like you mentioned, last year, the driving accuracy ended up being a critical factor, the ability to find the fairway. 6% of tee shots ended up in either the water or the native area. If you're following on Shot Tracker, you're all too familiar with, you know, a drive to the native area. You don't really know
what to expect from the native area. Wait, hold on, Colin. Talk to me about the native area a little bit. What exactly is the native area?
You're trying to sway your golfers, and you see the guy tee off, and it says drive 300 yards to the native area. And then the next, like, 15 minutes until it refreshes again, it's just this, like, panic in your chest. You don't know what's going on. Is he going to take a penalty shot? Is he going to have to drop? Can he play out of it? Is he stuck behind a cactus? And next thing you know, either he's hitting the ball on the green or he's taking a penalty stroke, and your guy is kind of ejecting and missing the cut. So a lot of native area at this course, and that's one of the reasons avoiding the native area ended up being critical last year's event. But it was windier at last year's event, and so it did play tough, but there were gusts up to 20, 25 miles per hour, a little bit more mild conditions, so it might be a little bit easier to find some of these fairways this year than it was last year. And that's one of the things that kind of fantasy golfers have to try to wrestle with a little bit. But it is a short course regardless, so we know that the distance isn't going to be one of the things that separates golfers.
I thought he was talking about, like, Ghost Nation was
going
to come.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was like, where are we going with this?
I called you by your last name, Colin. Looking at the table, and I was just kind of playing around with it while we were talking, and I moved recent form way up and then long form, not completely down, but that really gave a big boost to, like, Jimmy Walker and J.B. Holmes, some names that, like, we're more familiar with. You ever go with somebody that's just playing hot as of late, or is that kind of just a fool's errand in golf? I'm like, you know, you could find the hot hitter in baseball or something like that.
Yeah, it's closer to a fool's errand than trying to find the hot hitter in baseball. I'd say there are situations where it makes sense. Jimmy Walker is an interesting case for making that type of adjustment. You wouldn't want to do it for the full field and then run things like that, but for a one-off play, because Jimmy Walker was battling Lyme disease last year, and so in his long-term results, we have a lot of rounds that were played when he was really sick and not healthy, and you kind of saw the same thing with, like, Bubba Watson was another guy that models are having a tough time with this year, because last year he was, you know, he had lost a bunch of weight, he was playing a pink golf ball, he had fallen to, like, outside the top 50 in the world, and when he came back this year, it seemed like he was a lot closer to the golfer that he was 3, 4, 5 years ago than he was the golfer he was last year, and so I definitely think those are some of the situations where looking at the recent form can make sense. And the other, I think, is with some of the younger golfers where you don't have a ton of data. You do expect them to be sort of on the upward swing and the pendulum as far as their career trajectory. And so sometimes with a younger player or a guy that I know has battled injury, I'd want to look a little bit at more recent form. J.B. Holmes, I don't think there are really those situations. So with him, I think looking at the blend is a better way to go.
Hey, fair enough. Hey, let me get you out of here on this, Colin. All right. So when it comes down to it, you talked about Ricky Fowler. You talked about Molinari. Who are some of those guys maybe that are a little bit cheaper today, this week, that you recommend that can really help someone, you know, win a little bit of cash this week? Who are the cheap? What are the cheaper guys that you think may, you know, avoid the native area this week?
I think Adam Hadwin's probably the best play below $7,500 on DraftKings. He'll be popular, but we think the ownership is justified. We've got him with a 75% chance to make the cut, and his ownership is going to be close to 20%, but we're still comfortable with that in tournaments. I think a lot of times when we look for low-owned players, there's two things that we're hoping to accomplish. One is you're hoping maybe you can find somebody to outscore the chalky player, and the other is that you're hoping maybe the chalky player will miss the cut, and you can gain a bunch of leverage on the field when he misses the cut. Because Hadwin's probabilities to make the cut are so high, we think he's a chalky player that still makes sense in tournaments, and he's definitely the best value on the entire slate on DraftKings at a price of $7,300.
All right, absolutely. We'll be getting him in our lineups as well, trying to win a little bit of extra cash. That's how they do it on Daily Roto. Colin Drew spending a couple of minutes with us on Roto Experts in the Morning. Thanks for stopping by, Colin.
Hey, check you guys next week.
Sounds good, sounds good. All right, Jake. Jake, I got to tell you something. I am going to use the term native area a lot moving forward, just so you know. Just so you know, this will be integrated into the show. But Jake, we finish off as usual with Roto Cleo. And I got to tell you something, Jake, you continue, you know, to be out in front. Our man J-Rod and me, we're taking two different approaches to try to catch up with you. I saw that, you know, you guys had a little bit of a back and forth on Twitter the other day where you kind of outlined the point scoring system for J-Rod. And since then, he's been picking guys to steal bases every single day. You know, he's trying to go for the gusto right there and get the full 3 points for the stolen base. He did not get it with Insignarte yesterday. However, he got a W with Peralta, who pitched very well. You got a W out of Price. I got a W out of James Paxton, and none of us did anything on the dish. So we all stay stable. You still got a 10-point lead on me. J-Rod is going for the steals. I'm going to go back to what I had done before. I was making a little bit of headway picking the win, and then also on the hitter side, only picking the hit and inching the ball up the hill. I haven't really nailed the home run yet, so I'm going to be conservative. You want me to go first, Jake, or you want to go first today?
That's fine. Whichever way you want to go. You're the conservative one, so.
I will be the conservative one today. Yeah, I'm attacking Alex Cobb in Baltimore. I like these Seattle Mariners. And, you know, if I look, I see a guy that I believe should be in the All-Star team but probably won't, and he's hitting over 320. Give me Gene Segura. Give me Gene Segura to get a hit today. I'm going safe. I don't think Cobb, you know, is something that scares me. I like this Mariners offense. Give me Gene Segura to get a hit. And then I'll wait to see where you go, because I have on pitching, I have one chalky play and one less chalky play. So I'll see where you go and I'll respond in kind. Where are you going at the dish today, Jake?
One of these days I'm going to get it right with the Atlanta Braves getting home. Like, they're just facing people who just serve up home runs. Luis Castillo's in the top five. So, I have to go with Freddie Freeman here. Lefty on righty. It's going to happen one of these days, whether it's Albies or Freeman. Somebody's going to bomb one of these, not one of their offshoot hitters that are doing it right now.
Fair enough. You went Freddie Freeman a mere 5 days ago for the home run on June 22nd.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm going to go back to the Braves until one of them hit it.
All right, fair enough.
One of them needs to do it.
I will tell you this. On June 22nd, we both went Freddie Freeman. You went home run. I went hit. That was me inching the ball up the hill against you. So we'll see if it works yet again. What about on the hill today, Jake? Where are you going?
I don't like today. I guess it's semi chalky, but I honestly, he hasn't been as good as he was last year, and I'm going to go with Dallas Keuchel because, it's either Dallas Keuchel or Newcomb. I mean,
Those are the two I was going to go with. You take one, so, I'll take the other. For me, I was going to go Newcomb or Keuchel.
I go Newcomb every time, so.
All right, so you go Keuchel, I'll go Newcomb. I was going to go Newcomb. I had those two laid out. I'm going to go with Newcomb against the Cincinnati Reds. You know, they don't scare me much either. All right, so we're on the same page here. You're going Freeman and Keuchel. I'm going Segura and Newcomb. Real quick, Jay, because we have one more minute. Did you see the kind of after the game, the benches came out a little bit in these in the Rays-Nats game? I don't know if you saw this. Sergio Romo gets a strikeout to lock down the save and then starts talking a little bit of stuff, and the bench is empty. My question, Jake, really, like, if hitters can flip their bats, why can't relievers, you know, fist pump and talk a little bit when they get a strikeout? Like, why is one an unwritten rule and one not?
Neither should be. So people are too sensitive, and honestly, and they have been in baseball for some time. Celebrate all you want. I don't care. If you celebrate a strikeout because you're a pitcher, go for it. If you want a bat flip, the most fun is ever watch Japanese baseball.
Yeah.
People, go watch Japanese baseball. They celebrate every damn thing, and it's fun.
I'm just saying, if the hitters can do it, the pitchers should be able to do it as well. We're all about fun here on Roto Experts in the Morning. We put the fun in functional sports radio, and we're going to do it again tomorrow. Carton and Friends is up next here at 9 o'clock on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Tomorrow, we talk a little bit more about the NFC South. I believe the New Orleans Saints are the last team for us to preview. The All-In Kid, the King, and the Spitting Statistician. We're going to do all that and more tomorrow, getting you ready for some football. Call on in. We'll see if Trout walks away with it as well. Carton and Friends up next. Fantasy Sports Radio Network.